He's going to bring you a microphone. This is to record you.
What's all this stuff?
That's birthday stuff. We don't need it here. There's a book if you need it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I heard that too. Was that Elvis Presley?
Yeah. Thank you
very much.
Okay, can people hear me?
No.
All right, that's good. I can say anything. Hi, my name is Darlene. I am an alcoholic. And I thank you for 35 years of extra life that I got. And I owe it to you. And that's how I know quite a few people are sitting in here tonight that I made desperate. Oh my God, what am I gonna do? And people were there, so thank you. I couldn't have dreamt of doing this before I came into AA. I would have staggered me. My story started in Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's where I was born. I've had a couple people say, Albuquerque? You mean the one in New Mexico? I think, no. One in New York. Right? My dad was, he worked in the Atomic Energy Commission, which was producing bombs, basically. I had double cousins in the town of Albuquerque, which means that two brothers married two sisters, which made us kids really, really close, and we were kind of raised together. And I was thinking, I think it was last night, oh my God, I moved out of Albuquerque when I was 11, but before then, we would all get together. My uncle made bathtub beer. I thought, you know, everybody did that. But we were able, us kids, to sneak bottles of the beer. And we had a club. We had a club that needed initiation every time we met. We had to initiate everybody. And that involved putting a belt around our neck, hyperventilating until we pass out. And that was usually done by the older boys. They would wait till we went limp. And I guess that wasn't a great game. When I was 11, we moved to Livermore, California, when my dad was sent there for his business, and I started being a Californian. Still snuck beers, my dad loved wine. He was a wino, and I kind of followed in his footsteps. And I could sneak wine. My mom started hiding it. She'd hide it here. We learned to drink wine frosties when she'd hide the wine in the freezer. It wouldn't all freeze, which made it nice. And when I was 12, I started to be able to babysit. We lived in a fairly nice neighborhood. So the people I babysat for normally had well-stocked bars. So I would take me a big old mason jar, take a little, like a couple ounces out of each bottle, right? And I'd have me a big old, I could share it with my friends, we could party. Along in there somewhere, we partied in the Unitarian Church because I knew how to get into the basement. And I lost my virginity in the basement of the Unitarian Church in Livermore, California, with my cousin's boyfriend. And a lot of my story was made special things meaningless with alcohol, right? It just made it bad. I remember, I think I was about 16 when I was supposed to pick up my brother. He was playing in a band. And the guy that was throwing the party was one of the most popular guys in high school. And I don't know what went wrong. I slipped in, they had been doing construction on the road, so there was this little tiny ditch that wasn't marked. I slid into that ditch and took out half of his trunk. And I thought, let's get out of here. And my car died. It was my mom's car. It was really a good racing car. It was a Chrysler with a big engine. Anyway, the police, I don't know if anybody, I don't even know if it's made anymore. Those little boxes of Sinsin. It's powerful little tiny. I had never tasted it, but I had it in my purse. I threw the whole box of it in my mouth. When the police came and I thought, oh shit, right? The same feeling I had when I looked out on all these hopeful faces. Oh shit, I don't have anything. He said, have you been drinking? I said, no, sir. He said, are you sure you haven't been drinking? I said, officer, I'm not old enough to drink. I thought, that's not gonna fly. And he said, okay. I didn't get in trouble then, but I was causing enough trouble that my mom decided me to send me back to Albuquerque with my aunt. She was stricter and she could wail on a person. And she was a Nazi Catholic. Well, that probably isn't part of the story. I don't know. Anyway, I got back to Albuquerque and we're going to Catholic school. And it was so really strange. I was in a, you know how the caste system is in high school. Well, I was in a smart kind of category, intellectual, but kind of dull, boring, those people. I got to Albuquerque in my 16th year, and all these high school kids thought, oh my God, she's from California. She's probably got movie star friends, and all of a sudden I was popular. Oh, that was a year. Oh my God, we tore up that town, me and my cousin Cheryl. I tried to find my cousin Cheryl not too long ago, and I don't think she made it. I don't think she lasted a lot longer than when I saw her last. I've lost a lot of my family members to this disease. My mom was born in Missouri, and she was just desperately poor. I guess her dad would get terribly drunk when he got his paycheck as a coal miner. It was a farm, they had an old outhouse, no electric, no water, and they lived miles and miles and miles from any help. I think my mom said she was 5 when their little farmhouse burnt down. So they had to live in a chicken coop. Because there wasn't social services like there is now. Anyway, I moved back to Livermore for my senior year. And I knew there was something inside of me that said there's something wrong here. There's something really wrong. I went to counselors. Didn't know exactly what was wrong, but I met this guy when I was doing, I was being a candy striper at a VA hospital. And there was these two guys, they were doing internships for physical therapy, and I liked the tall one. So I married the short one. I thought, you know, he's gonna straighten me out. This is gonna be good. It's a nice wedding. I had a big Gone with the Wind dress. And actually, during the wedding, they said, take off your shoes. You're swallowing the groom dress. Anyway, he He had joined the Navy, and they wouldn't give him, what you get, an officer, when you get to be an officer. They wouldn't do that, so he did an inter-service transfer and was in the Army. And it just so happened that the morning after we got married, he had to go off for basic training. So we didn't even hang out for our reception. We just left to see if we could go to the motel. And the next morning he left. He was gone for, 6 weeks? He came back and, oh my God, I didn't know that they shaved these guys' heads, you know, right down to the, he had moles like all over his head, and I thought, oh my God, what am I gonna do? I can't even kiss this man. Boy, he was an ugly guy when he, I know, right? So we had a crazy marriage because we called it a month-iversary since we were married on the 18th, the 18th of every month, we had a bottle of wine. And pretty soon that wasn't really enough. I had to have my own stash. And I was looking out the window to see if he was on his way home. And if I couldn't see up the road, if I couldn't see his car coming, I'd take another glug, take another cigarette, rush to the bathroom, brush my teeth, spray something, go look out the window again. I think it was 1973. I was in, my husband had called me and he asked me to bring my 3-year-old, my son, my only child, to work where he worked. They were having a Mexican party, and he knew that I had all the decorations, you know, from New Mexico. I had a lot of stuff. So he asked me to bring the decorations and my son so that the people could meet Mike's little baby, 3-year-old. And we got on, can't remember highways anymore, 620 in California. Anyway, I looked ahead of me and I saw this car cross the center divider in midair, and he hit me head on. And there were, he died, I think. No. There was a passenger in his car that died, and one was, I don't know what happened to the other one. Anyway, the driver was severely injured. He went to a hospital where his mother was the emergency room nurse on duty that day. He was drunk. That was his problem. They were celebrating graduation from high school. Wiped him out. And I was severely injured. I had, in those days, some people are old enough, it was just lap belts, and that's what I had on. So at that kind of an impact, I went into the steering column full force and had a lot of head injuries, facial. Just thought of that. They asked me what kind of nose I wanted. I said, I want a little pixie, little fling. And I said, that would look ridiculous. We'll help you. It was shortly after that my husband left me. I was in Visalia, California. We were celebrating. We're always celebrating with his mother, drinking. I got up early. I thought, I'll clean this mess up. And you know, there were partial glasses of everything. I cleaned it up. I went to Betty's medicine cabinet, and I thought, man, there's Valium and all kinds of good stuff. Took a couple of those, and I don't know, there's got to be people in here that all of a sudden you think, oh fuck, I think I've overdosed. I may be dying. What do? I'm scared. So I called AA. I thought they could come out and fix me. Maybe before anybody got up. Well, then I thought it over, and I thought, you know, I bet I've overreacted here. I'm going to call them people and tell them, I don't need AA. I mean, they said, it's too late. They're on their way. And I thought, oh, boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy. How am I going to explain this, right? Three women, and I don't know, today in my mind, they were all dressed up real pretty. They may not have been, but they talked me into going to a halfway house that day, and there was like 30 men and me. And my husband, that was the day he decided to leave me in Visalia. I remember one day, this other lady came in. I didn't like her at all, mainly because I was getting most of the attention before. But she wasn't very, very good looking. She was a great big woman. Like, she could probably deck any of the men in there. And one day they came to me, they said, I'm going to call her Dorothy for some reason. So Dorothy's up on the windowsill, she's going to jump out, commit suicide. Can you help? I said, yeah, I can help. I went up there and I just went for her, right?
Oh, no.
You bet. I just gave her the biggest push. And she fought me. I thought, problem solved, right? Yeah. So, gosh, I don't remember how long after that my husband took me to court and took custody of my son. That was during a time when I had a little apartment, and the guys that I had met in this halfway house a lot of times would come by my house and pick me up for the meeting. So they said in court that my relationships with members of the opposite sex were not conducive to the upbringing of a minor child, and I didn't know how to combat that. So I lost my son, and I decided I didn't care. I really didn't care anymore. So I went down to the Oval, which is kind of the needle park in Visalia, and met up with some real dangerous, dangerous people. And so I looked for the bigger guys, you know, and I thought, I like you. You're handsome. You're going to protect me. And I went, this is the one black guy, and the next thing I knew, he was taking me to Watts to meet his parents. Now, hey, gang, this is not very long after the Watts riots. Well, we went to a party. I looked around, hell, I was the palest one in there. And then Curtis, god damn, I remembered his name. Curtis went to do a beer run. I looked around at these women in this room and I thought, I'm getting the impression they don't want me here. I was really, really scared. And I did my whole drinking career pretty much on my own, by myself. Ended up in Spokane. I got to the Love family. That was before that. I decided I was going to pick up a hitchhiker and take him where he wanted to go. And this Adonis was on the freeway standing there. And he said, I'm going to join the Love family in Seattle. I thought, God, my folks live in Squim. They're right next to each other. And I bet they'd love to see me. not so much. Yeah, I joined the Love family. Then I got involved with motorcycle guys. I had my son visiting me a couple of times at that moment. I mean, that period of time. And all these Love family people wearing robes and helping people across the street, whatever. They had him in Arlington. I don't know how this all happened. I didn't have my glasses anymore. I was very nearsighted. They said, have faith. Just have faith. Well, hell, I couldn't see a damn thing. And they'd tell me when a car was coming, right? So my son was left in Arlington for this 10 days that he was supposed to be visiting with me. He said, Mama, they had me washing dishes the whole time. After, a long, long, long time afterwards, when I got sober and healed up a little bit, I asked my son, what did you tell your dad that happened when you came to see me? He said, nothing. I told him we didn't do nothing. Smart kid, right? So in during these adventures and these times, I would drop into AA and pop back out and understand. I remember the first time I went into an AA meeting and I thought, they were just talking. I thought if they had electrodes going on or some pills they were passing out, I could get on with that, but damn. I didn't have any faith that God could do this for me. I really didn't, but I didn't have anywhere else to go. And I think alcohol itself is its own best teacher. I got to the point where I just couldn't manage to drink anymore. The last time I went to detox, it was here. I'd had an idea to go there, and I thought, well, I'll go visit Mary. She lives in the trailer court on Washington. I thought, she can help me. She was in the program. Well, I went to her house, and she was drinking like a fish. And then she started talking about Red, her husband, Red. She said, you know, he hasn't had any sex in, I don't know, 7 years now. Well, I got to feeling sorry for old Red back in the back of the trailer. I thought, maybe I can help him out. Well, you know how those old trailers are. I was in this little teeny long narrow hallway and I thought, what in the hell am I doing? And I exited stage right before I got to Red's bedroom. Thank you, God. And I went to the hospital, and they had a detox unit, but you know weren't giving enough drugs for me. I needed extra, and I don't know if they still do it. They gave bottles of Cipacol, right, mouthwash. I know it tastes nasty. Wasn't the worst stuff I'd ever drank. So I drank my mouthwash, my partner's mouthwash, went down the hall gathering other people's mouthwash. They caught me in the nurse's station where they keep the supplies, right? There's nowhere to put these things when they're empty. Yeah, I used to be able to get them in a little bag at night, go up the street and put them in other people's garbage. But that was my last detox. Don't know how many mental institutions, treatment centers, and detoxes I had, but they were numerous. And I guess the idea that I get from that is don't ever, ever give up on an alcoholic. One day it made sense. One day it clicked. And if people hadn't had endless, endless patience with me, he wasn't old. None of us were old then. my sponsor's husband used to sit on the couch. And I used to go to their house just to sit there, just to be safe, and sit there all day long. And he'd walk past me or sit on the couch when I went walking past, and he'd say, "And it just keeps getting better, doesn't it?" I wanted to remove his head. And if you hear of a Merlin Ballard around, let me know. I'm still looking for him. Oh, really, when I think of the number of people that it took to get this alcoholic sober and contented with that, it's mind-boggling. If I had to think about paying all those people, no way in hell. But the thing I like best, I went to college, I finally got a degree. After five colleges, I got a four-year degree. I had an academic counselor once that had made his thesis on why AA works, and he let me read it. His main conclusion was that it's not top down, it's not counselors looking down on somebody, let me tell you how I'm going to help you. It's people clinging together. That's what he determined was the magic, the miracle of this program. And to this day, I believe that there is magic here. My definition being, I got more out of it than I put in. I had to put in some, but what I got back sometimes would just floor me. Sometimes in the woods, when I'd go walking in the woods, I'd get goosebumps. And it seems like it doesn't happen as often now, but that feeling of, oh my God, I feel his presence. I really do. So I appreciate the fact that I can come in here. I can come in here and cry. And somebody will hand me a box of Kleenex. I can come in here and laugh, and people laugh with me. And I love this. I love the prayer at the end of the meeting, because I like to close my eyes and see if I can feel the electricity going around. Sometimes I can. Sometimes I'm not that perceptive, I guess. But I want to thank you for honoring me in my sobriety to ask me to come here and take up all your time, look out, and I hope that the rest of your evening shapes up. So thank you very much.
Don't go.